Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports. And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
But he has a shock in store for him. He has two great chances, Slim and none, and Slim's out of town.
Pedro Fernandez.
I wanted to do the right thing.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Emanating, coming at you from the multi-million dollar Sports Byline Studios. Check it. This is Ring Talk. Often imitated, but never duplicated, knocking out all bums. Welcome to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. My name is Pedro Fernandez. For the next 2 hours, I hope to inform you, entertain you, and maybe even irritate you. If I can do two of the three things, well, I have done my job. Bottom line is, we'll have the Godfather Larry Merchant here in a couple of minutes, of course, after the King. That's right. The King was brought to the ring last night, basically like a king on a throne. Bottom line is, he is the man. I'm talking about Ryan Garcia, still undefeated, 21-0. Got up off the deck in the second round. People said, well, you know, he ain't made of much. Nah, he made of a lot. He saw that shot coming. Lucky he did. Lucky he did. He got up. Bottom line is, he finished Mr. Campbell in the seventh round with a nice body shot. We'll hear from Ryan Campbell. We'll hear from the Godfather Larry Merchant. Mr. T will be here. In fact, I'm going to do a little special on Mr. T in hour number two. We'll do some Ali. This Is Your Life, Muhammad Ali. Also, Jacob Stitch Duran will be around. Of course, he cut Mannix to the stars, both in the world of mixed martial arts and boxing. Of course, he'll be here, and I'll ask him to break down the lightweight division per fighter. In other words, I'm talking about Devin Haney, Teofimo Lopez, Ryan Garcia, and of course, you know, Gervonta Davis. All four of these guys are like the stars now at 130, 135 pounds. Who's going to rise to the top? Well, guess what? Ryan calls out somebody after the break. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. We are live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, a brand new channel, Channel 217, and a plethora of other internet platforms. Straight up, this is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. My name is Pedro Fernandez. Thank you for listening to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Let's have some fun for 2 hours on Sports Byline.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
If I can't teach you one way, I'll teach you another. But I'm going to get the job done.
What is hip? Ryan Garcia's hip, folks. Got off the deck last night in the second round. That's right. The prodigy, the next coming of Oscar De La Hoya, the next Canelo Alvarez, a Mexican-American sensation from Victorville, California. And what is Victorville, California famous for? They got a barbecue down there. Outside of that, it's Ryan Garcia and the barbecue. The rest of the Victorville is just like Victorville. Bottom line is, Ryan Garcia got off the deck an hour in round number two, of course. Hard left hand. It came over the top. It was a bit of a looping left hand. And when it's a looping left hand like that, you can sort of see it coming. Unlike Pernell Whitaker, who would be a sharpshooter and would be shooting that punch straight and from his shoulder, this one was looped. So you got to see it. If it had been directly, Ryan Garcia might not have got up. Straight up, he saw the punch coming. He got up in the second round, composed himself well, and went on to win a seventh round stoppage, of course, with a body shot. Campbell now 20-4, 16 KOs. He was devastated afterwards, but the bottom line is, they stopped it at 150 at round number 7 because of a body shot. Mr. UK, well, the puncher, the 2008 Olympic gold medalist, he just couldn't get up. Bottom line is, this is Ryan post-fight.
Well, Ryan, congratulations. When you ride to the ring on a throne, you better perform like a king, and you did that in this fight tonight. What did you think of your performance?
Man, it definitely showed. So I think I showed a lot of people who I really am. You know, going to this fight, I wanted to show people that, you know, whatever they call you, you know, they wanted to call me a social media fighter. They wanted to call me a lot of names. Your teachers may call you things. Your parents even. Anybody who tries to put you down and tell you you can't become something. Remember, you're not who people tell you are. You're who you choose to be. You and I chose to be a champion tonight. I wasn't going to let nothing stop me, even when he dropped me. I got up. It was a good shot. I was cold. And he caught me, man. I was like, yo, I got dropped. This is crazy.
Walk me through that second round. You won the first round. You seem like you're in control. And then you get hit with that one big punch. And as you told Luke after the fight, first time you've ever been dropped.
I've never been dropped in my life. I think I got a little too excited over the moment. I knew I was in control, but I wanted just to dog him. Like, I just felt like I could crack him. But he cracked me. So, yeah, there was that. So I had to adjust and say, all right, I'm going to calm down. Because I knew I could beat him. I just had to get right back up and show everybody what a warrior really is like. That's why I got it on my shoulder, warrior, baby. My first tattoo.
What are you feeling there, lying on the deck for the first time with a minute or so to go in that round? What is going through your mind?
I was a little dizzy, I ain't going to lie. But I was like, you know what, it's not that bad. I mean, what's the worst this guy's going to do? Try to come at me, I'll just block. You know what I mean? I wasn't really too worried.
You were really excited about this fight, about getting in the ring and proving yourself on this level. You came out there, you were the aggressor in this fight. Was that part of the strategy?
Of course. I mean, Luke Campbell has never fought in his life coming forward, so I kind of knew like he was going to back up. And I'm not even, naturally I'm a counterpuncher, but I showed that I could take it to somebody and knock him out. So I'm very happy with my performance. One thing, I'm a man of my word. Let's go, Tank! Let's go!
You have a piece of gold around your waist, but with or without it, you have become a shot caller in this division. You've got the popularity. These fans here tonight, everyone that follows you on social media.
Hey, don't forget, I see you, Devin. Yeah, shout out Devin Haney. I like him. We got a rivalry, but I want to fight him too.
Don't that's
to fight everybody.
That's the goal. That's the question. You fought one time in 2020, first fight in 2021. What do you want to do next?
Man, I really want to be a man of my word. I want to fight Tank. I know people are, you know, worried about that one, but I'm ready for it. You know, this fight, I fought an Olympic gold medalist, you know, pound for pound. At the time, Lomachenko couldn't stop him. The Nares couldn't hurt. I mean, he dropped him, but couldn't finish him. I showed today that I'm special. And I want to thank God. I almost forgot. Oh, my gosh. Thank you, God. Man, he really, I told everybody it was going to be a body shot. Look at all everything. I knew it was going to be a body shot long ago because God told me so. Love you guys. Let's go, Texas. Stand up, Texas. Let's go.
Before I let you go, Ryan, walk me through that knockout punch. Were you looking for the body shot in that last round?
Oh, yeah. He was very worried about that hook coming. I've had that hook since I was born. So he thought I was going up top, and I just changed direction on him real quick.
So where does Devin Haney rank on your hit list of potential opponents?
Man, Devin Haney, he's going to be that opponent. Of course, I want to fight him. I want to fight Tank first, of course. But, you know, it is what it is. If we can make Devin, let's make Devin. Why not? Let's go. Let's go. Hey, I'm ready. I'm ready, man. I'm ready.
What did you say to Canelo after that win?
I just wanted to thank him, man, because without, you know, the Reynosos and Canelo being by my side all the time, I don't know if I would have learned all the things I learned, and I'm always grateful for having a good team around me, and, you know, I'm blessed. I'm blessed to have such a great team in Eddie and Canelo. They're amazing guys. They take me under my wing, and they show me the ropes, and I thank you guys with all my heart. Thank you.
Congratulations, Ryan. Star-making performance against Luke Campbell.
No doubt about that. Still undefeated now, 21 and zip, 17 KOs. Bottom line is the kid showed up. He got dropped. He got off the deck. He showed who he was made of. Of course, getting off the deck is tough. I remember getting knocked down and like not knowing what was going on around you. It's like, wow, you have no idea what's really going on around you until you collect your thoughts and it takes a couple of seconds. And by the time you realize, hey, I got to get up, this guy's on you and throwing punches again. So Ryan Garcia handled himself well last night. Luke Campbell, heartbroken after the fight. Can't blame him. He had his moment there. But when you're the opponent in the fight and you get that moment, you must seize that moment. In other words, you've got to take it. In other words, you don't get too many chances. You're not the guy that's supposed to win. But you get a chance to win, you're supposed to jump on it. And Mr. Campbell didn't jump on it afterwards. He didn't throw too many punches after the knockdown. So shame on him. He gave away his one good chance, I thought, for winning. A couple other fights on the card we'll get to after I bring in, it's time to bring in the Godfather. That's right, the retired HBO Godfather, Mr. Larry Merchant. Larry, very good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, and Pedro, I'm now watching the fight on DAZN. I hadn't seen it last night, and I've read a lot about it and heard a lot about it, but this is one of the trials that a young phenom like Garcia has to go through, and we found out something about him. I'll tell you a story, Pedro. Many, many years ago, there was a fighter out of Philadelphia who is tough and strong and fought in the style of Marciano and Dempsey. And when you fight in those styles, sooner or later you're going to get nailed or somebody's going to outbox you. Well, on this occasion, a real test for this fighter came up. And he was knocked down twice. And he got up and won the fight. And then we all knew that we had something special in the kind of fighter who's always facing danger. That fighter was Joe Frazier. He fought Oscar Bonavena, who was a tough, strong fighter from Argentina, I believe. And then everybody knew, okay, Joe Frazier is the kind of fighter who will get up and get after you. And there's no more treasured faculty in a fighter. And the kid showed something last night, and it's something we wanted to see, even if we weren't thinking that we would see it right now.
I know, and I feel so excited. I'm looking at this foursome. Of course, the champion from Honduras originally, but out of Brooklyn, Teofimo Lopez. Of course, Tank Davis, Gervonta Davis, the WBA 130-pound champion. I think he holds the title at 135 as well. Devin Haney supposedly got a belt at 135. And now Ryan Garcia. There's a lot of belts at 135. And I mean, too many belts, Godfather. So we're running through this little tournament here, these four guys, they could electrify the boxing world. All four of them, well, maybe not Haney, but the other three guys have enough to electrify the boxing world. Are the lightweights going to take over like the welterweights took over at one point in time in the 80s, do you think?
They might. They also might grow up to be junior welterweights and welterweights. We've seen that happen too during the welterweight era.
Okay.
But yes, we want to see these fights. I don't know if after the fight last night that Garcia's management wants to rush into anything, but it would be something to see, and I think Garcia has the kind of following that would puts him in the middle of it, in the sense that he can call the terms of the fight.
Don't you think we need to accelerate boxing, though, because of COVID? In other words, what I mean accelerate, although we'll get to a second, to a story out of the UK, they banned all boxing now because of COVID. All boxing in the UK is off, period. It includes an ESPN card next week. But I don't. Ryan Garcia is a special individual. Haney, I'm not so convinced on. Tank Davis brings it. Of course, Teofimo Lopez has got the crown right now. Vasyl Lomachenko is in the background, so the lightweights look good. I saw a thing this week where Sean Porter said that $1 million wasn't enough to fight Terrence Crawford. Is $1 million what it used to be?
Well, it isn't in real estate. It isn't in a lot of ways because money changes. The $200 a week I was making when I was in my 20s at the Philadelphia Daily News would turn out today to be close to $2,000 a week. So, but look, there's a lot of money to be made out there, and it does change things because everybody is guiding their careers to try to get the big fight or to challenge the money man, like Alvarez, but only a few special ones make it.
You know, I want, before we go to the break, I do want to mention that Canelo Alvarez, who was a fortnight ago coming off that win over, kid from the UK, Mr. Smith. I will say he looked real trim last night. Unlike a lot of guys between fights, Canelo seems to be holding it together. More power to him. He's dedicated to his craft, Godfather. A lot of Mexican fighters, a lot of Latino fighters, I can speak for myself, we aren't always the most disciplined guys in the world, but this guy's...
Well, some of it has to do with culture and the kind of food you eat and coming from poverty and suddenly being thrust into a lot of big dinner plates, put it that way. But be that as it may, I think it's true, and I think it was true 10 years ago when Alvarez was fighting fights that his management didn't want him to fight, that it's great to want to be great, and some of these kids just want to be great. They don't want to just wait for the big event and hope it happens, and maybe it does and maybe it doesn't.
You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. That is the retired HBO Godfather, Mr. Hall of Fame himself, Larry Merchant. And we talk about Oscar Bonafena. Before we go to the break, he died at the Mustang Ranch. I think Joe Conforti shot him. He owned the Mustang Ranch, and the guy shot him. He was dating his wife or something like that. Bottom line is, not a good ending for Mr. Bonafena. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Woo! It's going to be good.
Somebody shot me a text. What's it like to be buzzed? I fought Ernie Chavez in the National Golden Gloves at a weight that I shouldn't have. A welterweight. Anyway, bottom line is, he hit me so hard when I got up the second time and I looked across the ring, there were seven of them standing there. Seven Ernie Chavez's. That's how hard I got hit. So getting buzzed and getting up is a little bit weird, no doubt. Godfather, you got buzzed playing football. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I once played a high school football game at Ebbets Field, and I made a head-first tackle on a punt. And I felt it running down my neck into my spine. But when I got off the turf, I saw the guy I had tackled stumbling off the field, and I immediately felt better.
The psychological end of it. Hey, here's a good one. Had Meldrick Taylor won that fight with Chavez, would he have been as damaged as he was, or was the psychological damage so much that he couldn't come back?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
I said, if Meldrick Taylor, had he beat Chavez the first time and not lost so controversially in the 12th round, would he have been able, it took a bad physical beating, but I thought the psychological beating, he was never able to come back from that psychologically. Do you think if he'd have won that fight, he'd been able to come back physically? Because he never did.
I don't know. He was damaged in that fight.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen fighters win great fights, including Joe Frazier. Joe Frazier, in my opinion, was never the same fighter after he beat Ali.
No doubt about that.
He took so much punishment. He made such a heroic effort. He was in a hospital for more than a week recovering after that fight, and he gave so much of himself, there was just not enough left.
You know, of all the instances in boxing, I think that he was the absolute most possessed I'd ever seen. People talk about Roberto Duran being possessed for the first or Sugar Ray Leonard fight. Nah, nothing compared to Joe for that first fight. Even though I thought Ali won more rounds than Joe did in that first fight, but straight up, Joe Frazier, of course, had him in all kinds of trouble. And I think the 11th or the 12th round, Ali told me he'd never been hit that hard in his life. And then, of course, in the 15th round, he got decked. So got up from that. Switching the subject to White Hopes, Jerry Cooney. Had Jerry Cooney not been protected? And he fought Ken Norton. Ken Norton was 38 years old. That was sort of like his claim to fame. But had he been able to, and then he came out here to California, he fought a stiff. I watched him in the gym. They wouldn't put anybody in the gym with him that could really fight when it comes to sparring and things like that. He was just so protected. Had he not been protected, I thought he could have been a better fighter. What's your take on that?
My take is I don't know.
Okay.
I always assume that the guys who are outside the ring, the trainers and the managers and so forth, know more about their fighter than I do. And how they match him tells what they think about the fighter. For example, Wilder, 10 years a pro before he took a really hard fight. Right?
Yeah.
Because he started late and so on.
He fought a lot of stiffs.
He was a big puncher and a crowd-pleasing kind of fighter, and he had a following from out in Long Island, so he made some money. And then he lost to Larry Holmes, who was an elite heavyweight champion. No disgrace in that at all.
True.
And so it went.
In a statement by the British Board of Boxing Control as of 10 or 12 hours ago, following the increase of COVID-19 cases in the UK and the effects of such increases has on the NHS and the work of the Board of Medical Officers, it has been decided that no tournaments, no boxing will take place under the British Board of Boxing Control during the month of January 2021. They're going to come back in February and try to figure things out. That cancels an ESPN card there January 22nd. Some people tell me we're overreacting. I don't think you can take enough precautions here. Am I just being paranoid?
You know, it's like a fighter who has to protect himself. He may have a lot of guns and ammunition, but if he doesn't protect himself, he's not going to last long in this game. And I think the British board, with the spread of COVID in Great Britain, is I assume doing the right thing. I mean, they're there to protect the sport, and sometimes you have to protect the sport just like you have to protect fighters. And if they deem that it's time to put the gloves aside for a little while, then I respect that.
Okay. Looking back a fortnight ago, of course, the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world, Canelo Alvarez, in action. I mentioned him earlier being in shape, and he brought it. I mean, I went back. When you watch it the first time, I said, and then I watched it the second time. Maybe I was a little biased the first time, but he really brought it. He won all but a couple of rounds if he didn't win them all. What can you say about him? We talked about it earlier, and I try to push you on this one. But what makes him different from the rest of these guys? Lewis.
I think he wants to be great. As the younger brother of four or five brothers who fought, I think he was groomed in every way to be as good as he can be. And he had a spark inside of him that was willing to fight anyone before his management wanted him to fight them. And I think he just wants to be great. A lot of guys, you say, well, they want to be great, and it's great to want to be great. But he shows it, and who would have imagined when we saw him 10 years ago that when he was welterweight or junior middleweight, that he was going to get to this position.
That he would be the king of all boxing. Godfather, I want to wish you the best. Say hello to the godmama for me. Plant a big fat one on her cheek if you can. I wish you well. Have a good week. Stay safe, Godfather, and I hope to talk to you next week, sir.
Happy New Year, Pedro.
That's right. Happy New Year, 2021. It couldn't get no worse in 2020 in the minds of a lot of people, not just me. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Loose.
with Pedro Fernandez.
I'm just ready to get it on and crush this guy's skull.
Time to talk Nicaraguense boxing, baby. That's right. Alexis Arguello, of course, my buddy. God, I miss him. That's been 2007, I think, since he died, either by suicide or somebody killed him, one or the other, sort of like a coin toss in between, because Alexis did have his demons. I mean, he has some emotional problems. But the bottom line is, last night, of course, a young man from Nicaragua, let's start with the 108-pound guy, IBF light flyweight champion Felix Alvarado, now 36-2-1, 31 KOs from Managua, Nicaragua, retained his title with pretty good fight against the tough former IBF champion. I'm talking about DJ Creel. Creel came in at 16-1, left at 16-2. Pretty good fight. The kid's from South Africa, no doubt about it. A 10th round stoppage. Good fight. He was, of course, part of the Ryan Garcia undercard. Ryan Garcia, of course, knocking out Luke Campbell in the 7th round. Just like I said, I don't want to be bold, but I said it would happen within 7 rounds. And yes, I was right. And Hector Martinez was wrong again, of course, because he keeps saying that Ryan Garcia is nothing but a figment of my imagination and he's going to get drilled. His fundamentals are gone, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, right. He's still undefeated, Hector. Anyway, in a rematch of a 2017 scrap, Rene Alvarado, now 32-9, 21 KOs. Doesn't sound like a great record. He, too, out of Managua, Nicaragua, squared off in a rematch against Richard Gutierrez, 25-3 with 20 KOs from Venezuela. Of course, the first fight, Alvarado won by knockout. Gutierrez, though, came back and won, dropped him twice, I think, in the 12th round to win a decision. Get this, 113-112. Man, there were some funny scorecards on that. Remember, if nobody wins any rounds at all, you get 108 points. This was 113-112 on all three scorecards. A knockdown in the 12th round proved to be the difference between winning and losing for Gutierrez, who takes home the WBA super featherweight title to Managua, Nicaragua. And anytime you beat a guy from Venezuela for a WBA title, you've done something, because the world of Bunko and Anarchy, that's what I like to call them down there out of Venezuela, they don't let their guys lose if any at all. Straight up, I'm just not. That's just the way it is. Of course, they've always been favorable for the guys from South America, especially Venezuela, because I think they're headquartered in Caracas, Venezuela. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking to the world of boxing and MMA. You know, I had the pleasure of being around Mr. T. Who is Mr. T? Lawrence Turow. Who is he? Well, people thought he was a boxer and a wrestler and a bodyguard and an actor and all this kind of stuff. He was some of that kind of good stuff. But the bottom line is, let's dog him a little bit and show this little clip here with Roddy Piper.
One of the most successful shows ever, possibly in the history of shows. And, of course, I'm creeping up on the back of Mr. T. I can tell you that because it's got it written right here on the back of your chair. Mr. T, hello. I know you can hear me, and I don't mean to bother you. My name's Hot Rod. Of course, you know who I am. And I know who you are because your name's written on the back of the chair, and I'm assuming that that's there so you don't get lost. They told me to come down here and talk to you because what you got here is this great, successful show, then you guys are portraying these bad guys, and they wanted to know, since I am a bad guy actual in real life, and I do beat people folks up for a living, but they wanted to know, they kind of wanted to know, how does it feel to be portraying someone like myself?
Well, you ain't nothing, man.
Why, because I don't have a chair with my name on it? Excuse me, I don't need one, because I can take any chair I want to take. I ain't nothing. What are you talking about?
Hey, man, I seen what you've been doing on TV, man. You've been fighting them little wimps. What I do is
wimps,
for real.
Wimps? What?
That's right, wimps.
Oh, what are you talking about, wimps? I'll let this take a look at you. Wimps, let me see wimps. The only wimp I can think of is Cyndi Lauper's manager, Dave Wolf. He's a wimp.
Yeah, speaking about Cyndi Lauper, she happened to be my friend. We go out together sometimes. I like her so. And I heard about what you did to her in Madison Square Garden. I don't like that at all.
Oh, you don't like
that? That's why you call yourself tough, because you can punch on a lady?
Wait. I am an equal opportunist. Let's put it this way. Let's take a look at you. Here you are. You shaved your head on both sides. She dyes her orange. What you're doing is you're supporting all these wonderful children. Now, how can they look up to you with you looking like that, her with long hair? The children of America today must be sick to look at someone. Hey, I'll tell you, you mess with me, T, I'll put an X on your name, brother.
Mr. T and Roddy Piper. Born Lawrence Turow, 1952, Chicago, Illinois. Of course, an actor, a wrestler, bodyguard, TV personality. Did the Mr. T thing, of course, on the A-Team from 1985 to 1994. He got hooked up with Michael Second to None. Of course, he was then the, I take that back, he hadn't yet won the IBF middleweight championship. So I think it's 1988. He's fighting for the IBF title against Frank Tate. We're in the, at the Las Vegas Hilton. I take it back, the Flamingo Hilton across the, from Caesar's Palace. I think the fight's going to take place at Caesar's Palace. In fact, I'm sure it is. So they have the day before weigh-in because Frank Tate is having all kinds of problems making weight. And Michael Nunn, of course, is a prohibited favorite to take the title from Frank Tate, the 1984 Olympic gold medalist. Why? Because of the fact that, you know, Tate died to make the weight. Of course, when Frank first started out, he and I did an interview, of course, on this show. And I said to him, how much you weigh, man? He goes, oh, about 184. Right? He was only like a 214. So anyway, of course, taking off the X weight didn't help him out. He sweated. Of course, that was the first time they ever had a day before weigh-in. They had the day before weigh-in, of course, to give Frank Tate the benefit of being able to replenish his body with fluids. But then they used that as a stage, to publicize the fight a little bit more, that kind of good stuff. Of course, in the end now, it's a health thing and they want guys weighing in 24 to 36 hours earlier so they can put fluids back in their bodies. But to me, it sort of gets away from the notion that guys have to make weights to get into a fight. Anyway, so here we are. I'm going into a party for Michael Nunn in, at the Flamingo Hilton after he beats Frank Tate. And it's like a Saturday afternoon, I think it was a Saturday afternoon fight. So anyway, I'm over there. Mr. T's working the door. All right, he knows who I am. So I walk to the door. He goes, who are you, man? I said, listen, Lawrence, you ain't got to play that kind of crap with me, okay? Don't be the tough guy here, man. Do you always have to play character? Don't you ever, like, aren't you ever Lawrence? Are you always this Mr. T guy? So he gets all huffy. And then he starts bluffing. I'm like, man, come on. So anyway, he says to me, he goes, man, you want to get in here or not? I said, I don't think you want to stop me. I said, you know, Michael Nunn's my friend. Dan Goosen's my friend. I don't think they want me standing out here in the hall. I said, you really need to keep me out in the hall? I'll let you go this time. Yeah, right. So I walked past him into the place. A few fights later, Michael Nunn again is fighting, this time in Reno, Nevada. And Lawrence, of course, out of Chicago, Illinois, you know, he's did cartoons and he's did everything there. He's Dancing with the Stars. You got to give him some props. Of course, at one point in time, he was making $80,000 a week with the A-Team. I mean, more power to him. That's some hella money. No doubt about that. All right. So he's in Reno, Nevada for a Michael Nunn fight and it's cold outside. Okay. It's like on winter time. You know, right? So he shows up like Mr. T. I mean, like, to the weigh-in, like Mr. T. And we can't get in, they had the weigh-in indoors, obviously, but we're standing outdoors, I guess we were standing outdoors for like, maybe about 8 to 10 minutes. And the fighters were already inside, but they wouldn't let us inside, the media. And he was part of the media group, I guess, at that point in time. So anyway, he was standing there, and like this body armor, like this piece of plastic body armor, and Chip and Dale outfit, where he had like the bow tie on, or some crap, and cuffs around his wrist. So anyway, so I started jabbing him. I mean, it's freezing. I said, hey, blood, ain't it a little bit, I said, hey, Lawrence. And he goes, man, don't call me Lawrence, man. You know my name. Why you want to call me Lawrence? You always want to call me Lawrence. Why you want to call me Lawrence? You want to disrespect me and call me Lawrence? I said, that's what your mama named you. He goes, yeah, but I changed my name officially in 1970 to Mr. T. So you shall call me Mr. T. I said, okay. I'll call you Mr. T. Okay, Mr. T. Are we cool with this, Mr. T? I mean, the bottom line is it's like 38 degrees out here. Aren't you freezing your ass off to show somebody you got big arms, this and that? Man, you know, if you wasn't Michael Nunn's, if you wasn't Dan Goosen's friend, you and I would go outside. I said, we are outside. And he says, he looks at me. He hasn't got a whole lot to say. I mean, I beat him psychologically. I'm not going to beat this man physically in a fight, obviously. But psychologically, I just like gangster slapped him all over the place. So I said to him, listen, Mr. T, I'll call you Mr. T from now on because that's your name. You did change it legally. I didn't know you changed your name legally. I thought you were still going around by Lawrence Thoreau. Man, why you got to say that again? You know my name is Mr. T. Anyway, I knew how to incite the guy, no doubt about that. But at the end of the day, you know, he was a bit of a fraud. I mean, he said he was a boxer and he did all this other kind. He didn't box anybody. I think he hung around Leon Spinks for a while as his bodyguard. And if you were Leon Spinks' bodyguard, what does that mean? You got him coke? You got him hookers? I mean, because Leon didn't do a whole lot of training. Leon just like slouched from one place to another. Remember they woke him up, in Chicago for a press tour. I think he was doing a press tour for an Ali fight. They woke up Leon Spinks in Chicago and he couldn't find his teeth. So he had to leave. He couldn't find his teeth in the room. Couldn't find them. So he gets on the plane and he goes to the next city on the line, Detroit or something like that. And they called the hotel calls, and he says, yeah, we found some teeth. And we want to know whose teeth they are. They were Leon's teeth. Well, I know Leon Spinks here. So that was also the time that he had money. He had money in his sock. Leon was another guy that carried money around in his sock. Thousands of dollars in his sock. You know, you could take the ghetto out of guys, but you take guys out of the ghetto, but you can't take the ghetto out of guys. Speaking of Spinks, good story on Spinks. Of course, living across the street from the great Emanuel Stewart in Detroit, Michigan. Nice white upper middle class neighborhood. The only black people in the neighborhood are Emanuel Stewart and the three Supremes. I kid you not. Florence Ballard, Mary Wilson, and Diana Ross. The three Supremes owned houses on the same street as Emanuel Stewart. Diana Ross lived directly across the street from Emanuel Stewart, okay? So, you know, Leon Spinks, after Diana went, west with Berry Gordy, when Berry Gordy and Motown Records uprooted from Detroit and decided they needed to move their act to LA, she went out to LA. She sold the house to, guess who? Leon Spinks. So Leon buys a house, and of course, the heavyweight champion of the world at that point in time. If only for a minute, of course, because I thought Ali let him win that fight. The first fight, I'm not trying to say that Ali was, took a dive or anything like that, but I'm just trying to say that he was so ill prepared for that first fight. Of course, Spinks only having eight fights previously and being the Olympic gold medalist. I just thought that he sort of like didn't really train for that fight and thought he could just gangster slap him. You know, Roberto Duran showed up for fights without training, so Ali did some of those fights as well, not training. So anyway, of course, Leon Spinks winning the first fight. But in between fights, he buys his house across from Emanuel Stewart, Diana Ross's old house. So I guess it's about, he's lived there about 6-8 months, and Emanuel says to me, he hears all this noise coming from across the street. I mean, noise like, ah, help me, ah, bam, 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 ah, help me, help me. Somebody is screaming for their life. I mean, this is like life or death. Call 911, okay? So this is like prior to 911. So anyway, it's in Detroit too. So Emanuel's freaking out. He goes, I don't know. I didn't know what to do, Pedro. So I grabbed a handgun. Checked it, you know, put a round in the chamber. In other words, he had an automatic. It's like a Glock or something like that, a Glock. So he chambers up a round, and he goes to walk out the house, and his wife goes, where are you going with that gun? She grabbed the gun out of his hand. Yeah, she grabbed the gun. You ain't good taking that gun nowhere. Anyway, so anyway, he ends up going across the street anyway, goes across the street. And he hears all this noise, and you know, I mean, somebody's getting halfway killed in Leon's house, and a man is screaming for pain, help me, help me, help me, oh, oh! And you can hear him, he's being struck with something, I mean, something like, it's like somebody's hitting a ball with a baseball time and time and time again, or somebody hitting a drum with a drumstick. Well, what they were doing was, when Emanuel got the door open, the back door, he opened the back door, and there was Leon Spinks on the floor of his kitchen. His wife was sitting on his belly, and her girlfriend was hitting him over the head with a frying pan. So I guess that sort of helped Leon get a little rummy. There's no doubt about that. But think about that. What an ass kicking that was from the old lady. Taking one from the old lady. The frying pan. You got a 220-pound woman sitting on your chest. You can't get up. You can't move. You got a few drinks going. Because he was a drinker. He was drunk. There was no doubt about it. He was drunk at the time. He admitted that. And he's taking these shots from the old lady. I think that's what led to the goofiness of Leon Spinks. Not that he was totally not goofy beforehand, but he wasn't as far off as he is now, believe me. You are tuning to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. Stitch Duran comes in hour number two, Ali in hour number two, some more fun in hour number two as well. Of course, this is hour number one of two, the Sunday edition of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Into my
life. And these are the arms that long to lock you inside every day and every night. Girl, and here is the soul of which you've taken control. Can't you see I'm trying to show love is right? Oh, show and tell, just a game I play when I wanna say I love you, girl, so show me.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Fifty-seven minutes past the hour. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Hour number one of two today, of course, live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio Channel 217, of course, and about 1,000 other internet platforms. You might be listening to the show live. You might be listening to a delay. Bottom line is, You can be doing a million things right now. The fact you listen to Ring Talk Live worldwide, well, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. The USC, dead as a shot pig, a stuck pig. I kid you not. They had a card last week, of course, in Las Vegas. The Wonder Kid was, Mr. Thompson was a winner in that fight, but outside of that, you know, come on. I mean, the USC, they're really hurting. There's no talent. I keep telling you time and time and time again. I may be repeating myself, but there's no talent. The USC has run out of talent. They've ran out. Of course, they're letting those lot of people retire and or just walk away because they don't want to pay them the money. They don't want to pay them the money. They don't have anybody on the bills. I'm looking at this UFC schedule all the way through March 27. They have three USC pay-per-views scheduled. They've only got one main event. Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor are going to go in a rematch January 23rd, 2021. But why would they want to go again? Why would you want to pay $80 to see that again when McGregor won the first time? I mean, come on. You don't want to see that. You want to see Conor McGregor fight somebody that's a challenge. Anyway, Conor McGregor, the boozer that he is, he may have diminished since the first fight, and Poirier might beat him this time around. Maybe? Probably not. I don't think they're going to risk McGregor in that star power. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. Hour number two forthcoming, live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, Channel 217, of course, CRN as well. Hour number two, we'll delve into the world of Muhammad Ali. Of course, This Is Your Life, Muhammad Ali. We'll spend some time with the cut man to the stars. We're talking about Jacob Stitchstrand, the king, when it comes to cut man in the world of mixed martial arts and boxing. We'll hear from him, and we'll have a couple of surprises as well in hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. So stay tuned after the news. Ring Talk Live Worldwide is a production of Sports Byline.